Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Text 51551. Drive Time on RTE Radio 1.
Teachers who are members of the ASTI union have voted in favour of industrial action up to and including strike action unless the government immediately addresses key COVID-19 issues in schools. They have also voted to take industrial action for equal pay for equal work to be taken in conjunction with one or both of the other teacher unions. Well, I'm joined now by Kieran Christie, who is General Secretary of the ASTI, and thank you for joining us this evening, Kieran. I know members voted in favour of taking industrial action on the basis of a number of issues being addressed. What are those issues in relation to COVID specifically that you want immediately addressed?
Well, one of the key messages that we can take out of the outcome of the ballot is that ASTI members want schools to remain open and they want it to be on a sustainable basis. And if it's going to be on a sustainable basis, there has to be a comprehensive testing program in place, rapid testing and turnaround and so on. There has to be appropriate resources in schools. We're very anxious that prior to Halloween, it appeared to us that the seams were beginning to creak somewhat. We had the issue around tracing, for instance, and we need all of these matters to be dealt with strongly and comprehensively. Now, I attended a meeting this morning with officials from the Department of Education and NPHET, and I sought assurances, for instance, that the school teams that we've been promised in relation to public health, who will go into schools very quickly if there is an outbreak and deal with them, that they would be reinforced. And I also sought assurance that the contract tracing, the situation is dealt with and that people are not sitting around for days waiting for a call when they know that they have been in contact with a confirmed case. These are crucial matters in order to keep our schools open. Pardon me?
Did you get those assurances?
Well, I've been assured that the authorities are working on these matters and that they intend that as of Monday morning these matters will be dealt with, and we'll be watching very carefully to ensure that that's the case.
Okay, so as of right now, would it be your expectation that ASTI members will be returning to the classrooms after the midterm break?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. A strike would be a last resort, or industrial action is always a last resort. But what we want to do as a trade union is we want to, in the first instance, engage with the Department of Education and engage with the health authorities. I've already written this evening to the Department of Education seeking that engagement so that these matters are attended to and dealt with forthwith.
Okay, so you've mentioned a couple of things there. Serial testing, for example, is that one of the things you want to see in order to avoid industrial action, serial testing in schools?
Yes, that's one of the things that our members have mandated us to seek, and we certainly are seeking it. And not only the testing, but the whole package in relation to the testing being done speedily and that the results are come back quickly.
Within 24 hours.
The tracing, yes, indeed, and that the tracing is done. Because the sustainability of keeping schools open hinges very much on efficiency with regard to those matters.
Okay, so can I ask you then, Kieran, what makes the schools different to, we'll say, with the testing time of turnaround time of 24 hours? People working in nursing homes, for example, don't have that at the moment. Bus drivers don't have that at the moment. Other people who are working with the public service don't have that at the moment. So why should schools get it? Because, you know, there is a finite amount of resources when it comes to testing capacity and lab capacity. So if we say that schools get testing within 24 hours, it means other people won't.
Well, we understand what you're saying, and we don't want to get involved in a pitching one section of society against the other. But I would point out, Sarah, that since midsummer, the Department of Education, the government, have set out as the key number one objective. Remember, they kept the pubs closed in order that schools would stay open. And we're holding them to that in the sense that they cannot make out that the priority is keeping schools open and then not resource that. Either it is the primary key objective or it's not. And if it is, then the safety of the million people involved in education, primary and secondary, is of paramount importance.
Yeah, but
and
I'm sure, I think the government's argument and NPHET's argument is the reason we're all locked down right now, the reason businesses across the country are closed and we all have to work from home and public transport has been reduced to 25% and all of the various measures that we see under Level 5 is to keep the schools open, to reduce community transmission, to keep the schools open. That's how NPHET says is to make that is how they make schools safe, by reducing community transmission.
Well, what you've just said underlines my point. The great sacrifices that are being made out there in the wider community to keep schools open must be matched by ensuring that what's going on in schools is safe and resourced. And so that's we're certainly at in agreement on that.
Okay, so can I ask you about serial testing then? Because again, in terms of where that's happening at the moment, it's happening in direct provision centres, and this is only when a testing capacity allows it. It's happening in direct provision centres, it's happening in nursing homes, it's happening in food processing plants, all of which are places where there have been many major problematic outbreaks that have led in some cases to entire counties being locked down. We haven't seen that though, have we, in schools, major problematic outbreaks?
And we don't want to see them. And certainly what we need is a system which is agile and which can respond in the correct fashion wherever there are outbreaks. We did see statistics there shortly before the outbreak where the incidence of outbreaks was increasing week on week. And therefore, we're saying that the system must be agile and at the ready to ensure that we don't end up with a situation that would have that developed, for instance, in the meat factories there midsummer.
Yeah, okay, because again, in terms of the information that we're getting from the health authorities, it's that in primary schools, 2.7% of close contacts of confirmed cases are testing positive. In secondary schools, the rate is 2.1% of close contacts testing positive. That's compared to the wider population, 10% of close contacts testing positive. All the evidence seems to point, Ciarán, to the fact that this isn't actually a problem in schools in terms of the spread of the virus, in terms of outbreaks. I mean, for example, do you know, have there been many instances of teachers contracting the virus in schools?
Well, we're beginning to, we sought for weeks engagement with the HPSC and they declined, and it was only last week that we had our first meeting and we had an engagement this morning, and we're seeking as much data as we can possibly get.
But I mean, you're the union, so I'm sure, given a teacher's opposition and concerns around all of this, that if there were like a number of teachers getting testing positive for COVID-19, it would be fed back up to the union very quickly. You'd know about it if there were large pockets of this happening.
Well, we have consistently said that we want to keep schools open. And there is a view out there that the school opening since September, a mammoth task, and everybody has put the amount of work that has been put into it within school communities has been enormous. And what we're saying, and we don't think we're asking a lot, is to ensure that all of the necessary mechanisms are in place in terms of testing and tracing and all the rest of it, sure, to ensure that the sustainability of the opening remains.
Okay, but have you heard of one case of a teacher testing positive? You've heard of one?
Well, there have been cases of teachers and students, getting COVID, but we're not au fait with the up-to-date figures in terms of the transmission within schools, as distinct from people bringing it into schools.
I understand it's not easy for anyone to walk into a classroom when there is 30 people sitting there in front of you, young people, particularly in a secondary school, and we know that the older the children are, the higher the likelihood there is of transmission. And I think everybody understands that that's not easy, and there's a sacrifice and a risk being taken by teachers there. But the counter-argument that you will hear, and we've already got a load of texts in relation to it, is that everybody is going and making sacrifices and taking risks and going the extra mile in order to keep the country going. You know, for example, and you'll have heard this argument yourself, Ciarán, you know, other frontline workers like nurses and firefighters and doctors and all of that. And none of them are talking about walking off the job. So what do you say to people who make that argument?
Look, all of that's very fair. But for instance, I had a teacher in contact with me this morning who knew that he had been in contact with a confirmed a student case in his classroom for well over 50 minutes, in fact for several hours last week, and was sitting waiting to be contacted to be told that he'd need to go, and assuming, like every other person in society, that they'd have to go and get a test. And after waiting and waiting, having made contact them, him being proactive and making contact, he was told he didn't need to have a test. Now, we need clarity around the whole issue of what constitutes close contacts in the school setting. Okay. And, you know, to allay fears and to ensure that the reopening remains sustainable.
Okay. And if you do decide on industrial action and walk out of the schools, do you think you'll have the public support behind you?
Look, I've already said that industrial action, strike action would be very much a last resort. We certainly consulted with our members and asked that they give a mandate that if in the circumstances where we were dealing with situations that were intractable and that we couldn't make progress with the Department of Education and so on, that we would definitely have it there, but as a last resort. But we definitely have a mandate now if it's necessary, okay. And we will use it if it's necessary.
And when will you make a decision as to whether or not it's necessary? Have you set a date?
Well, no, there'll be no knee-jerk reactions. Our executive will be meeting in the coming days and they will be considering all aspects of this matter.
I just put one or two texts to you before I let you go, Kieran. One person says teachers are essential workers. They should continue to work. If they refuse to work, then they need to go on a PUP payment. Another person on the same vein says they were off from April until September with full pay. Now they want to go on strike. If they go on strike, put them on the PUP payment. I'll get your response to that, and then I want to put one other one to you.
Okay, well, certainly they weren't off from April to September. Teachers will tell you that they were working very hard with their students remotely, and they found it much more difficult in terms of an engagement than if they had been attending schools from March right through till the summertime. I can't remember what the second point was.
It was on the same lines. And just one other here, and then I'll let you go because I know you've had a busy day. This person says, I'm a healthcare worker. I cried on my way into work and home from work all throughout the lockdown due to the additional pressures associated with COVID-19. We had COVID in the hospital and a shortage of PPE. I kept my anxieties to myself because it's a pandemic and I knew I just had to do my bit. Words fail me to express how I feel about the teachers threatening a strike. So much for we're all in this together.
Well, your texter there, captured a lot of what some teachers, particularly those in the high-risk Medicaid category, feel as they drive to school every day as well and stand in classrooms with no more than a face mask on them to protect them of maybe 30 students. So, while I well understand what your texter is saying, those anxieties now have just been transferred to some of our members in classrooms.
All right. And as I said, I do understand it's a very difficult situation for teachers in relation to this as well. Kieran Christie, General Secretary of the ASTI, thank you very much for joining us.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
We've had loads and loads of texts over the last 2 hours from our listeners in relation to COVID-19 in schools and the possibility of teachers going on strike, the ASTI in particular. One person says, this is a teacher, I suspect. I feel terrified going to work every day without proper PPE. Some teenagers won't wear their masks properly in class. We don't have proper ventilation. Another person says, so Sarah, interesting view supporting the ASTI teachers. I guess the staff in creches, the staff in grocery outlets, the staff in hospitals and so on who've kept Ireland going and work much longer hours and actually face more potential COVID contacts are less important. Time to cop on ASTI and live in the real world. Shameful behaviour, says Ronan. And they go on in that vein on both sides of the argument. And I suppose the question is how much or to what extent are schools a threat when it comes to viral spread among pupils? Because there was research prepared by NPHET in response to several questions from the ASTI, and that does indicate that while there have been clusters or outbreaks in 110 schools, transmission in most cases happened outside school settings. At least that's what the research prepared by NPHET suggests. However, my next guest would question how positive cases in children are categorised, given her own personal experience when her child tested positive for the virus. Deirdre McGillicuddy is an Assistant Professor of Education at UCD, and she joins me now on the line. And thank you for joining us this evening, Deirdre. You might tell us firstly what happened in relation to your own son.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much, Sarah. I think just to say that schools have been unbelievable. They have been unreal in their response and supporting the safe return of our children to school. I see them every day up there at the school gates, managing staggered times for schools, managing the space outside the school, bringing children in, making sure the hands are sanitised. They're going above and beyond. And I think that there's no doubt that they're helping to reduce the spread. But I think it's unreal and it's not possible to expect them to prevent it. I think that we need the HSE to come in and support schools to help them prevent it, if you like.
Okay.
And I think there's a burden on principals in particular. It's really unreasonable to expect them to contact trace. And my own son's case, my principal, he spent a whole Saturday contact tracing right up until 10 o'clock that night.
Before we get to that, Deirdre, you might just tell us what happened to your son.
Yeah, he was at home and he was fine on the Saturday. He had a bit of a sniffle. He had a bit of a runny nose, and that was fine. The next day, then on the Sunday, I suppose I was looking at him, and it looked like he had a cold. And as the day went on, then he started to develop a cough. So first thing I do is check the HSE website, you know, what are the symptoms? And the one thing I suppose that I want to make it clear to everyone over the radio is that he had no fever of 38 degrees at any point or any time. He had a very low grade, 37.1. I don't even think that is categorised as a fever. Mm. He had no shortness of breath. He had no loss of taste. He literally, to me, it looked like he had a cold. So, and the cough was like, it wasn't unlike his other coughs he's had with winter colds. So I rang the doctor just to check, you know, and the doctor said, look, it doesn't sound like COVID, but we send him for a test. So we went for a test, and the test came back positive. And to say we were shocked is an understatement, because you hear so many people going for tests and coming back negative, but he came back positive. He has a brother and sister, so we had taken them out of school as well, thankfully now, and I've kept him out of school for the week as well, thankfully as well.
Because a lot of people, I think, maybe wouldn't. They'd say that looks like a cold to me, and off you go into the school gates. In terms of then your interaction with public health, is your child's case classed as transmission within the school or community transmission? I mean, where do they think he got it?
Well, just when I spoke to public health and to say to people, like, we have zero contacts. We've had no external contacts, no play dates, no gatherings, nothing. And we're very aware of actually the impact of COVID, because we lost my poor Uncle John during the summer to COVID.
I'm
he actually
sorry.
Died from COVID. So we know the implications of that. So when we spoke to the public health, I made it very clear that this was not community transmission. But from the response back, it seems that it is going to be classified as community transmission. Now, if we don't have a clear idea of the criteria around what is community transition and what is school community transition, how can we, you know, based on the figures that are being provided, say for sure that schools are a safe environment?
Okay, so what has happened in your own case, given you think that he must have gotten the school, given your own interactions or lack thereof outside of the school, that would bring you to question what is being classed as community transmission, if your case is being classed as community transmission. Okay, so do you know then what happened in the school following your child's positive case? Was everybody in the class tested, or how did they handle it?
As far as I understand, they weren't all tested. I think this is an issue across all schools across the country. There's an inconsistency in terms of deciding who is a close contact, and that's based on a risk assessment carried out by the HSE in collaboration, I suppose, the principal giving information. But the HSE decide who a close contact is. And to be honest, you know, I don't think it's good enough. I think schools are unique places. I heard you ask the question earlier, what makes schools unique? They're the fulcrum that bring people together. They're the one institution in society that people gather at on a daily basis. You're bringing hundreds, if not thousands, of people together before school, after school, during school. You're putting children into classrooms that are overcrowded. Our ratios are the highest in the OECD. We're underfunded in education. And because of that, you know, you've got children in a classroom for 5 or 6 hours together, and there's going to be crossover. It doesn't matter what teachers try and do. They're dynamic. Classrooms are dynamic places. Children are going to the toilet. They're flushing the same toilet. You can clean it as much as you can. You know, you're still going to have children in and out all day. You're going to have them at handrails, light switches.
Okay.
So, you know, I think the responsibility that's being shirted onto schools is unreasonable. You know, there's no, people are going to get COVID. So if a child is COVID positive, all the children in a class should be tested, because the implications of that for me are huge. Because it's not only the children in the class, it's their families, it's their grandparents who are all involved in that network that bring them in and out of school every day.
All right, Deirdre, we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you very much for joining us. That's Deirdre McGillicuddy, who is an assistant professor of education at UCD.